The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, using the M word, and a host who's trying to sleep his sleeping schedule. Fix his sleeping schedule. You know, that's how stupid I'm feeling. Viewer's discretion is advised. And because of this sleeping schedule jazz, I slept like very early and my face is now entirely swollen and my hair looked like shit and there's a lot of sound outside because it's 5 a.m. and people decided to wake up early. What the fuck? Hello and welcome to the 23rd episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish, and I am your most amazing and the only host of In the Memory of the Goldfish, Koi, the half celestial with 11 souls, who's gonna be turning 20 in 16 days. So yay me! And on that occasion, I thought I should give to you yet again another late episode, and I hope this won't get repeated again because I'm trying to sleep on time. So that's a thing. And yeah. Today I'm gonna, to record this episode, I actually, what did I do? I forgot what I did. No, I remember. Yeah, I googled a lot of Italian courses and I know a very basic amount of Italian such that I can at least pronounce the island that I'm covering, which I'm pretty sure I might not pronounce properly because I couldn't find a proper video about it. So what I'm covering today is Poveglia Island of Italy. It's spelled as P-O-V-E-G-L-I-A, but according to the little research I did on the pronunciation part, G is not really pronounced properly and apparently V is a V, not a B. So I thought it's going to be Poveglia, but it's not Poveglia, it's Poveglia. So yeah, if I'm wrong, please let me know. And now on that note, let's get on to the fishy news. So the first fishy news is, woman found naked in Florida storm drain is rescued again. I'm like, again? Interesting. So the article reads, 2 months after the Florida incident, Lindsay Kennedy is found in Texas tunnel. Now, you know, let's replace her name with the word great tit bird. 2 months later, after the Florida incident, a great tit bird was found in Texas tunnel. I mean, so fun. Now, there's actually nothing more funny in this news as I was reading it. So I thought, let's drop this naked woman, and another naked woman popped up, like nearly naked, on the next news. Florida woman nearly naked leads cops on a high-speed chase in a stolen car. There's yet again nothing funny about the entire thing. Just the fact that the car she stole was, I believe, a Cadillac. And it was white, which had a white Superman sticker on it. So the owner of the car kind of had it coming. So title of a sex tape, I think. Moving on from both of these, one of these news. Also a fun fact about this Florida woman who stole the car, fact that she, I believe, drove through 7 different counties. And like, didn't she need gas or something? Like, that was a little too fast, or I don't know what. But yeah, that's happening. And the third news that I would cover today. Yes, today we have 3 because threesomes are so much more fun than twosomes. Cop facing slack after saying he stirred colleague's tea with his genitals. I mean, I cannot drink tea again, especially given by men. Though on a second thought, I might. Rather, I'd like that. The article says a police officer could lose his job today after he told a female PCSO he stirred his tea with his penis. And what would be his excuse? So I wasn't able to find a spoon, so I spawned a tea. And I'm like, yeah, here, have a sip. It'll hit you hard. So the PC is called Steven Green, and he claimed he was having a little bit of laugh and he had misjudged his friendship with his victim, but was found guilty of 9 charges in front of the disciplinary panel. And I was like, what the hell was he expecting? You like stir somebody's tea with your genitals and the person's like, oh, Steven, this is funny, give me a cup of tea with your cum or something in it too. I mean, consent or something, but yeah. And between May and July 2020, he made sexual comments towards the woman who identified only as PSUA in the article and licked his lips while gyrating his hips. I'm like, yeah, that rhymes. Read it again. Licked his lips while gyrating his lips. The fuck? Anyway, did I interchange hips and lips? Yes, fuck, sorry. I interchanged that. It was licked his lips while gyrating his hips. Did I not say that? No, it does not make sense. I have no fucking idea what makes sense anymore. I woke up too early for anybody's existence, and I feel my voice sounds like that early morning voice. So basically, I'm sleeping with every listener of mine, and you are able to listen to my early morning voice. Aren't you so lucky, people? So this PSCO described PSCOA described him as having a cocky attitude, behaving as though he owned the place. And you know, I read cocky attitude. I'm like, yeah, use a better pun, honey. So the Stevens, the offender, allegedly watched the female locker room as they were getting changed and gave her a shoulder massage without her permission. And I was like, okay. Another witness came out and said that PC Stevens had told the female officer that I am a PC and you are a PSCO. If I say bend over table, you just do it. On other occasions, he had also taken a picture of the junior officer from her Instagram account and printed on a cup for her as a gift, which read "Brilliant, not perfect." And though she returned the gift with a note saying "Thank you, but no thank you," she also said, "I would have liked to use the mug as a gateway to tell him to back off, but I wasn't given the chance. I feel it could have been resolved." Now, despite being this entire thing obviously crooked, and like I'm expected to make a serious comment on all of them, but like honestly, naked Florida women doing things, I really don't see what comment I can make on that other than just Florida women be less Florida women. But on the other news, it basically talks about, you know, sexual behavior, especially in the police force, and how women are still treated like crap in half the domains where they weren't originally present as men. So yeah, and happy Pride, people. It's June and it's my birthday. It's the Gemini rainbow season. I really didn't have a transition to get into the ad space, so imagine there was a transition and imagine there's a transition coming out of it. So today on Out of the Blue, it is actually very interesting, and I would like you to Google up some of the words and look it up because it's absolutely freaking scary. But there's always a but, and buts are for pooping, so we are not gonna use buts for pooping. Or are we? Because otherwise, we are just gonna die. We, on Out of the Blue, today are gonna talk about decapitated heads. Let me tell you about this actually amazing story whose trailer, story, not story, a movie from 1976, which is called Vice Blood, wherein a person decides to become a pastor in a church while preaching amazing, weird ass things. It's a comedy. And I just saw its trailer. Did I say I just saw its trailer? But in case. I am all over the place today. What the fuck? Yeah, okay. So, breathe, Koi, breathe. So, this film I saw, I didn't see, I actually ended up seeing the trailer off because of this research, was a comedy film which used a certain prop which they said something about. This was basically the same size as you. And apparently, the prop that they used was an actual Amazonian Ecuadorian. Or Ecuadorian Amazonian warrior whose head was decapitated about 100 or more years ago, and then the head came to America. So, sounds like fun, right? So this thing is, the head is actually called Stantsta. It's spelled as Stantsa. Like most websites said that it's pronounced as Sansa, but All of them are American, so I'm not sure. So I'm gonna go with Sansa, but my heart wants to call it Stansa. And yeah, so the Sansa is basically a shrunken head. So what used to happen is in most of the tribes near Ecuador and like a lot of tribes around the entire world, which I'll come to soon, that when somebody died, their skulls and such were removed. They sewed the eyelid shut, sealed the mouth with wooden pegs. Once doing this, they boiled that head for about 2 hours or so, reducing its size to one third of what it actually was. Then they turned the skin inside out and then stretched it over the head or sew the head back on the body, maybe to preserve the shape or not. I'm not sure. The article was we do not know why they did it, but they did it. So yeah, and when this used to happen, where was I? Yes, sew it back onto the head or sew it back together, one of those things. And then hot stones and hot sand was filled inside it to contract it even further. Then hot stones were placed around and in front of it to make the shape a little more permanent. Then another few steps, including charcoal and other heated things, used to even harden the skin of the face even more. And now it became a very small thing when, it's less than one third of what it was, one third with the boiling and then hardening and stuff. So it becomes rather small, less than your palm or your fist, you know. And once it was this big, they decided to wear it as a necklace around their necks. So I was like, okay. The reason why tribes did this, and in this order, as I read in research, was that when they used to raid another's village, if somebody died, their spirit, which spirit could come back to kill the person who killed them. Yeah, now that was not a spirit, that was me being clumsy. So, in order to avoid this and prevent this, the Jivaro tribes and other tribes too used to shrink the heads of the people they just killed and strung them around like pearls. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive. You should not be if you want to avoid a haunting, you better not cut somebody's head and then wear it with you all the time. But it's kind of weird. But what do I know? So I was like, okay. The second reason, according to most articles, was this was also, as a method of saying that we revenged our ancestors who were killed by this person. So it's an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind kind of situation, which kind of makes sense because the other thing also, this was like, all right, I've killed so many people and I'm wearing all these people that I killed as a fucking necklace, so you better not mess with me. And I just imagine it, how weird. I'm getting goosebumps thinking that somebody who walks in front of me is wearing like a necklace made out of heads. And yeah. So I, a normal human being, felt that. But when the whites came into the entire domain, they went mad. They loved the heads so much that they bought it from the tribesmen in exchange of guns and knives. The craze was so high that the prices of the heads went as high as $300. Now, I wasn't sure the $300, was it like $300 in the early 19th century? Not the in the early 20th century or the late 19th century, or is the $300 equivalent of now? And I was not able to find anything reliable on it, but there was a number, and I'm telling you that number. So the tribesmen started to kill even more people than they usually did, and they used to start shrinking their heads to sell it to the white folks because white folks are weird and they want to buy decapitated heads for some weird reason. The craze was so high that people even made counterfeit shrunken heads. And it's said that allegedly about 80% of shrunken heads in the museums and the private collections are counterfeit. And when it is said counterfeit, from my understanding, that means those are heads of real people, but they're not ceremonially shrunken. So I was like, okay, but so yeah. And when I was thinking of this, I was like, yeah, and these old people, they throw shade on Gothic high schoolers and then they go ahead and buy decapitated heads. And what kind of gory thing are you into? And also, when I wrote Gothic high schooler, the autocrat wants me to write it as hot high schoolers. And I was like, yeah, I'm not a pedophile. I was just a high schooler like 2 years back, so shut up. But so there's that for this tribe in the Latin America. And there was another tribe in New Zealand called Moko Mokai, and the person who collected from this tribe was H.G. Roble. He was somebody in the army, and he was just like an interesting human being, to say the least. But for this specific thing, the process of Moko Mokai was a little different, in the sense they did not really shrink the heads. But what they did was, when a high-standing noble in their clan died, the head was preserved, and basically to honor their high standing. And during the preservation, the eyes and the brains were removed, and all the holes were sealed with flax fiber and gum. The head was then boiled and smoked, and then dried in sun and treated with charcoal. Once this was done, it basically became a leather mask of sorts, and the head was then given to the tribesmen family, who would keep it in an ornate box and bring it out for sacred ceremonies. And I was like, A, why the fuck did I ever stop looking into funeral traditions which were weird? B, what the fuck is wrong with Europeans? Now when we keep ashes, they're like, oh my god, ashes are so creepy. And they used to come, and like even in this case, they used to come. How wrong does that sound? They came and they bought these heads from all over the world. And like how it happened in Latin America, it started happening in New Zealand too, that the tribesmen started killing other people just for the sake of it, and not for the sake of it, to get new heads to sell. And they literally served those heads on silver platters to the collectors. Just imagine the dinner table conversation of, you know, selling these heads on Amazon. So, Daddy, I ordered like 7 different heads of 5 native people who I killed because I liked the sounds of it. And I was like, how disrespectful were they? Like, being fascinated is one thing, but then buying heads, and then people selling heads which had ceremonial value, and then just the entire process of keeping proper actual heads is just weird. Now these heads are in the New York Natural History, whatever that museum, and I was like, why did that, in that movie they did not animate these heads speaking? That would have been creepy, these heads flying around. And I was like, okay. So this tradition is no longer a thing, but during the World Wars, the Nazis used to practice this tradition on their victims. So yeah, there's that. And I cannot think of transitions today. You know, I'm back to square one now, because my nose is swollen, my hair look like, I don't know what they look like anymore. And yeah, maybe next week I'll be more in my senses, but today I just woke up and birds are chirping. So deal with it. Today's story is called Tables, and I love the timestamp that I've given for it. And I'll tell you the reason why I've given the timestamp, because that is one of the few things I remember about it. That I wanted to show how the person who's writing the story basically ended their sane, normal life on the specific date, and everything after that is just a metric of time and not something which happens on the calendar. So it's kind of that gory thing. But yeah, so the timestamp is 5 years, 32 days, 46 hours from 16th June 1922, 8:25 hours. You know, sometimes while recording and reading the story, I end up making like oral edits to the entire thing, and then I hate those edits, and then I delete that and re-record it. So that's what I just did. So starting the story, the birds tweet even before the wind decides to rustle with the leaves. I hear their screams. I feel the veins in my throat popping out. The little rough, itchy hands simply going around my throat and grabbing my larynx. scarring it a little, begging me to start screaming like the birds. And today, for it's a new day, so I just give in. As I give in and as I scream, the birds in the tree up front take a flight, go to the sky, tweeting harder as if they also want to echo the song of the itchy hands around my cords. You know, the reason I keep on saying itchy hands is because for some weird reason, when I am recording the podcast, since I have a very, very sensitive throat, after 18 minutes or so, my throat starts to itch. And I want to start screaming, but that screaming won't really help. So yeah, that is a little reference to that. I slip out of the sheets, being sure not to disrupt any more of it than I need to. The cotton mix slides off my front and back. The moist air touches my bare sides. It flies through my thighs and flutters through my hair. What I must have wanted to write around my thighs. Basically, the guy is naked. That's what I want to tell you. And it flutters a little through my hair. The little pollen gets stuck to my stash. You know, my nose didn't like this initially. Now, it's like how everything simply adjusts to everything or simply stops working. My nose is somewhere between those two cliffs. I walk to the chair on the east corner and I wear my vest, which was once white, now turning yellow. It is, however, so translucent. Wearing it is as same as not wearing it, it feels, but wearing it still feels more acceptable. I throw my white underpants on the gray floor and I put my feet in those holes. You know, I couldn't figure out what people used to call underwear in like 1920s. So I called it underpants because that sounds grandma. But if it was called something else, please let me know. So I put my feet in those holes and bent. Ooh, putting feet in the holes. And bent down just enough so my fingers hook into the elastic and touch it. And I pulled it up. The elastics kind of dug into my inner thigh and kind of crumbled my will everything. But you know what? That's too much detail. I actually wrote that. And I don't know why I'm obsessed with naked men. But I kind of do too. So, moving on. On the next chair is the vest, the shirt, the suspenders and the socks. I believe suspenders at this point of time was called callus, but what do I know? Each get 129 seconds to fit themselves into my existence. Each little thing kind of corsets even more without being stupidly tight. I mean, operation can be loose and stoic, but still be good to hide your strength from everyone. Now, why I said corset was, because in my opinion, whenever I wear socks, it kind of like binds my feet and it gives me the corsety feel. So what corset here is the socks that he's wearing. I know it makes little sense, but so does my existence, okay? I slipped into my shoes. It took me 135 seconds to do that today. I felt my left hand lifting up and clapping against my cheek. Hey, what the fuck is wrong with you, dog? I literally clapped against my hand to create the sound and they started to bark. Am I not allowed to create sound effects now? Okay, so the dogs are quiet now, but the birds have started to chirp. But we keep on entertaining birds on the show, so it's perfectly fine. So where was I? Oh, left hand clapping against my cheek. It did leave a rude blush, but you know, I deserved it. In 6 seconds, a person can either be saved or thrown into the pits with the ears of indiscipline and dilatory. Dilatory, for all the uneducated people like me, means being tardy. And I saw a little bird in front of the garden, feeding itself on the putrid little grapes. It will die, that is. Those whole intense sharp devils of grapes which grow here. I think planting them basically acts as a method of shock people back to their wits. Who would expect them to taste that bad, you know? I walk out And I want to eat a tortilla right now. I want to walk out and go have Mexican food. That's what I want, because I opened the fridge and there were some like sprouts there and I ate that, and I really want those to be there and like, you know, have some really good food because I'm feeling very hungry right now. Okay, so after confessing that I'm hungry, I actually realized that I'm very hungry. So I went to the fridge and I started to discover the marvels that we have there. I had cake, which was a little too sweet for my liking. Then I ate some fruit, which was also very sweet. So my entire mouth is right now filled with saliva. So yeah, there's that. And where was this person now? Okay, so I walk out. The wooden arch to my room has no door. I've often asked for it, but the tower structure won't be able to sustain it, they say. I mean the tower, which has about 20,000 kilos of metal at its top, cannot sustain another door. Idiots. I spit on the side of my coat door and take out my cigar. Pick up the lighter from near the tools table and I light it as I walk down the staircase. As I touch the ground, Ada was standing up front, patting her skirt. 11.3 delta today is convulsing. A little. How little? Just, you know, like a lot little, she said, giggling. I just looked at her from the side of my eyes and she froze there. Ready the tools, we will make things better for this one. Send Carlo and two more. Ada was running. I should look up how to pronounce Ada. What the fuck is wrong with me? I should have done that initially. Okay, so it's called Ada. And yeah. So Ada. Okay, so he asked her to send in the people. Ada was running. I do not know why she runs when I ask her to do something immediately. I mean, what's the rush? As I entered the main building, I picked up the stick with the sandalwood lion carved up top and a silver sharp tip. Though I could never see the point of using silver. It is so soft, it is difficult to poke into things properly. I mean, it goes blunt. If you hit the floor too hard, it is vain. That's all. Maybe that's what all is. That's what science is, you know. Vanity. I love how this guy rolls. I hit the base of each door as I walk on it. A clank, then a whimper. That way I know that they're alive. While my brother handles congestions, I handle these oddities. I think I still have more fun than him and more than anybody or anything else. I walk around the stories. I walk around these rooms, the hallways and the galloping harrows. As I do, I reach the second story. I did not realize when I did that. Now I was standing in front of the room 11.3 delta. I believe what I wanted to have written is it's 11. delta and not 11.3 delta, because 11.3 delta makes little sense. So 11. delta. He is breathing heavily. That is why I don't. I don't know why they keep on asking people to breathe when feeling anything. Mad people do that. Breathing is for the insane. The nurse and the three not so loony loony toons. Not the loony loony loons. Wow. That follow her. I did not know how the whites of these people become violet and blues, whereas mine just become yellow and browner. Do they go and toil in aquamarine or what? I stand there in front of the room. My back towards the door, I look at them and tap the stick on the floor twice. The silver tip kind of bends, I see. And with that, my heart also makes a weird voice calling it out, that's where the vanity ends up getting breaking a little bit. They get in. Carlos was able to easily control the little fretting miss. They tied him up and they dragged him out, holding up his arms and his legs on the floor being dragged. I noticed that there are some facial hair which are now apparent. This is the first time I saw him ever since the first time I actually saw him. And, you know, it is also my first time working with somebody this age. I didn't know what these people acted like during puberty. I believe the physical features are like how everybody else's are. Interesting. I walked behind, looking at him and judging each and every thing that he does. He is being escorted to the next life, to a better or the more possible, the heaviness life. And then he perhaps either will become another stepping stones in the world of science or become a medical marvel. I have always thought that the stairs do cause complications, so when they reach the tower, I ask them to carry instead of pulling him on the stairs. As we reach the top, the table in the center and my tools to the right angle at a clear 66.345 degrees from the table. You know, I love this person. I'm not sure how I ended up writing in this manner, how vain and cruel and crude, but still interesting, but wrong, and basically psychopathic this person is. And it's like interesting to develop such a character and then like totally forget about it. That's the most fun part. So I take the handrail and make a little hole I take a handrail and make a little hole to put up the cross on the north wall as they restrap him to the table, leaving his belly button and face exposed, making me look. It took me an extra minute after they were done strapping him before I can hang up the cross properly. I recite my mother's plasm and I remove my clothes. As I did, all others did as I was. It is important that no extra germ touches the patient. I take the handrail and keep it back on the table. I take the first syringe, which is filled with grape juice, and I pierce the belly button. He started to move and fidget a little, and the others got on top of him and held him down via his shoulders. I took the other syringe filled with saline water and poked it right next to the previous one. So I just remember I was supposed to write that when he was being restrapped to the table, his belly button and face should have been exposed. And just to make it clear, he used a hand drill to drill a hole in the wall to hang up a cross, and then he kept that hand drill with the other tools, the medical tools, on near the operating table. So just remember that as I read further. I looked towards Carlos and he came where I was, and you know, injecting people with grape juice and juices of random things was something which medical practitioners of the time actually used to do. I'm not sure who and what, but shit like that used to happen. So I looked towards Carlos and he came where I was standing and slowly started to push in the grape juice. Now I knew the timing for which is required was now the timing was that of the essence. I took up the handrail, placed it carefully at his temple, looked at the cross in front and began to rotate my hands, slowly drilling in. I see the blood started to come out faster than usual in a larger quantity. Maybe I apparently went near a vein a little too much, but the blood worked as a lubricant of sort, if nothing else. Then I heard the bone cracking and little white fragments came out with the blood. Now I was in my domain. I hastily took out the drill and took the ice pick to insert the thing once and for all. As I did, the patient suddenly calmed down. I asked Ada for the time and the signal, and signaled me when 125 seconds were done. As soon as she signaled about the 125 seconds, nothing happened. His breathing still did not work properly. I wasn't sure if he reached sanity or nirvana. I mean, all sanity is about sleeping on time and waking up. I see that a little pool of piss started to get accumulated down there, tainting the restraints a little yellow. Now the restraints need to be cleaned again along with Dave. Off to the grapes, I say, as I walk back into my room. This is infuriating. Another good white cloth turning yellow. That was it for the story. And I don't know how I end up writing such things sometimes. Maybe whatever it is. Loved it. I'll refer to it when it comes in the actual research. And as I told you, the story is inspired from the most haunted island, quote unquote, in the world, or the most haunted and the most illegal place, one of the most illegal places in the world to visit, according to most American. Oh my god, so I ate sweet shit and my mouth is producing so much saliva. Wait, okay, hi again. So basically, the history of this island is, you know, like almost all super old things, a mix of legends and history. So, and with a little distinction, what is the history, what is the legend? So what I'll do is, as I do all the time, that I will do the research for you guys, because you don't really like doing research but want to know about the paranormal and the true crime. And I will set a kind of, not a proper ground, I'll just tell you, all right, I read multiple, like the only things which I had multiple sources on, I am talking about the things which were spoken by just one source, and especially the source's main motive was entertainment. I'll say already I read this too, but I'll just say already maybe it's full of shit because, yeah, sounds like it. So, okay. Well, some sources said that the island was the centerpiece of an... Well, the civilization in the island has been there since the Roman times, and it was the centerpiece of the Roman trade and the main road connecting Claudia in the south to Heracla in the north. I'm pretty sure I butchered the names, and I didn't even look up what these two names are supposed to signify, but they are, I believe, two major towns for trade according to the Romans, for the Romans, but yeah. Though what we know about it, like for sure, is that it became a very important settlement because of the trade hikes, and even had its own local government, which according to the medieval times is a huge deal. There was no real way to trace who were the first humans who settled on the island, but most people say that there was a tussle between, you know, two clans, Tradenico and Palazzo Ducale, who, and these people kind of fought and they have a slight war, and Tradenico people or person settled in the island, as they were given safe passage out of Venice after the entire charade, which I was not clear what happened, why it happened, because yet again multiple sources, everybody saying different things, so go read. In 810 AD, there was a war in the northeast history, and the Franks fought the Republic of Venice. They sieged Malamocco, and after a very fierce battle, quote unquote, Venice won. The Pavilion settlers were amazing warriors, and they had a very strong, and they showed like loyalty to Venice and the entire Republic. Therefore, they were granted special privileges, like they were not. It was no longer important for them to pay taxes and have their own military of sorts, and they became an even more flourishing economy. Now, I haven't written this in my notes, but I remember there was some article which talked about three basic islands, and the lion's share of trade and taxes and people were Pavilia, and it was over, I believe, more than 60%. So they were like, this place was actually one of the most important things once upon a time. But then shit started to boil down and things started to happen. There was also this thing that the earliest settlements, along with this, like the trussle which I told about, was in the 300s AD when the Roman Crusades were happening. And during this crusades, Pavilia was considered as a safe haven wherein a few settlers came down to settle for temporarily or forever. We are not sure, but that also happened. Now, back to the kind of present, that is 1378 or 1334, depending on which document you read. There was a war with there was a war happening which may or may not be related to this incident, but during this war what happened was our little beautiful island burst into flames, and I quote again, and I could not find the previous instance, so that happened, and Pavilia was destroyed kind of, and 63 houses where over 80 families lived were either died or were made to run away from the island, making it an abandoned island. So one fact about medieval families was that they were very large. They were extended families. So 80 families could have meant like thousands, if not more, residents living there. So it is said that, as it said, that the whole island was evacuated, according to some sources, while others say some grape plant and something remained back. So, in the war, it is said that everything but churches were destroyed. And like, when I say destroyed, it means like, you know, destroyed to the very ground, properly destroyed. And so, yeah. Then another fun thing happened, that is the world went into the beautiful, beautiful time of the Black Plague. And, you know, fun fact, the word quarantine comes from Italian and can be ordered kind of to the island. So a lot of ships which used to come at the island were asked to stay there for 40 days as a quarantine. And the word for 40 in Italian is quaranta. So they used to stay there for 40 days, and that is the word which ended up becoming quarantine. And I'm pretty sure I do not know how to pronounce Italian well, so please do not kill me. Though the according to my untrained ears, Italian and Thai actually sound very similar, and I was like, oh my god. But yeah, okay, so this is where the word quarantine comes from. And it was like a place for visitors and the people who other came by the sea to dock here. So Venice was hit 69 apparently times by the plague during 1348 to till the late 18th century. So it was in 1576 when the plague came back after like the millionth time. The authorities finally decided to separate the infected and the diseased from the people who were fine, and they buried them outside the city grounds. But soon it became overwhelming. Like it said, 1/3 of the world's population or even more died because of this disease. So what they decided was they started to put the bodies and the infected in the island of Pavilia. Then again in 1630 the Ministry of Health undertook the island in like very late in the 1700s, but in 1630 they started to use the island properly to dump in the bodies. And as a result, the island basically became an entire place for the victims of Black Plague and the Black Death. And the people, they used to put in people who, like, even if you sneeze, even if you show the mildest symptom of the plague, off to the plague pit to die. So what this ended up developing into is that in the 1793, there were ships which used to dock there, as I told you. So there were people who, you know, well, what? I got a notification that there was a room called Fisting. And I was like, what the fuck? Now I've just put my phone on airplane mode and kept it aside so that I do not get distracted again. Anyway, so the ships which used to come here, they used to check for people with infection and such. But the weird thing was that the infected and the healthy were docked in the same island with little precaution, according to the research that I was to come across. I was like, yeah, that really does not make a lot of sense. But then again, it was the 1700s, so I really cannot blame them, really. So they say that there were allegedly minimum two ships which came here, and the island was famed to be the island of no return. The people who were sent here, including the doctors and the medical staff, it was basically a death sentence that if you're here, that's the end of the road. So there were plague pits here, and people used to these plague pits acted as mass graves, and a lot of times people who were still alive used to get thrown into the pit and then sometimes even allegedly burnt alive. Though it is now concluded, according to a lot of research that I was able to find, that almost 50% of this island soil right now is organic human remains and is kind of very nutritious. And I'll come back to this, why it is nutritious. So, and remember I told you that only the churches survived, and there was one, this church with a bell tower, and it had a stone engraving which says something in Italian, and I'm not going to read it and butcher the language, but it translated to "do not disturb the dead for contagion in life resting," which kind of basically means do not disturb the dead. There's dead are resting here, kind of. So and this plaque was made in 1793. It is said that around 100,000 plus 60,000 men or women died there buried there by 1799, and there are actually a few books written on the island about the plague and the entire thing. So when the last Spanish ship, which was the infected one, was come here, it was supposed to be there for the established time, and they said that the 8 of the crew member, they died from the disease, but everybody else who was found was in a state of shock. Now the Venetian officials were able to communicate with them, and only one sailor was found sane on the ship. He had been instructed to take shelter on the ship as guard, and while others basically took refuge in the main buildings on the island. The boy met with them every day until one night he started hearing strange frightening noises from the woods behind the buildings. Shortly after he heard these screams, all his fellow mariners, being too scared, weren't able to leave the ship as such. Now, in the next morning, when the things settled down, and I'm having goosebumps right now for no good reason, it's not even that scary. So the next morning, he found all of them in one very small room. There were 23 people. They were like kind of huddled together, and they were speaking incomprehensible phrases, which was not Spanish, which was not Italian. They were just saying things. And I do not know why my body is reacting in a very weird manner. I'm getting goosebumps constantly ever since I started reading this specific one paragraph. So, oh my God, my inner thighs are also getting goosebumps. Wow, what the fuck? The island remained uninhabited and like deserted for the lion's share of its time. Though it was formerly, like, still was the structure for public health. Then did I tell you that the island during the plague pits and stuff? So according to some research, Italy was one of the first countries, not Italy, Venice, was one of the first republics, I would say, or the kingdoms, to actually have doctors and, you know, hospitals and that kind of thing. So the next thing which happened is in 1992, according to more or less every source, there was a asylum created here. If not an asylum, at least a tuberculosis hospital with a psychiatric ward in it was made. The political environment, just for a little reference, is that Mussolini is in power, fascism is on the rise, and they like the place is not good to be to have any kind of disease really. So a lot of websites were like, you know, like initially the asylum was very good, and I was like, if it's 1992 and it's an asylum, it cannot possibly good. But we, before we get into that, the hospital, like, as I said, the hospital also had tuberculosis. That's what, and at that time it was called congestion. And that's why I have also mentioned that in the story. And now this is the part from which the story is inspired from the entire thing. So the psychiatric ward obviously had a weird ass doctor who was kind of a very bad person and used to do torturous methods and used to employ torturous methods on his patients. So there were experiments like shock therapy, lobotomy. Now from what I could figure out, lobotomy was in the 1930s. So I'm not sure when it started happening, but it did start happen. It started happening actually like around sometime. What even am I saying? I'm so all over the place. I'm so sorry, guys. So lobotomy is basically, you know, as I said in the story that I wrote, that it's basically they used to take hand drills and stuff and drill holes into your brain to fix the thing, or take an ice pick and put it through your eye into your brain. And this had a very bad kind of effect on most patients. When I say most, it means over 1/3 patients died, and most and some a good part of them became, you know, like either immobile or became worse than before. So it was basically them just poking around things and annoying. So this thing used to happen there, and there's some people, there were some sources which said some nurses who used to work there, they said that the patients used to scream so loudly during these procedures that their screams could be heard even on the neighboring islands. Though I was like, maybe this is an overreach, but whatever. Though fun thing to note is that at that time, anesthetics were not used on these patients because these patients were all quote unquote mad, and no particular precautions were called upon. That's why he used the same drill to drill into the wall, and the same without cleaning it, put it in the patient's head and got naked while doing the operating surgery, because that's what people do. Yeah, so during all the time that the asylum or the hospital was functioning, the patients said that they saw strange movements, thing moving around, pulls, tugs, light ops were like, you know, doing that thing, and voices speaking to them. But since most of them were mentally disabled or had tuberculosis, nobody cared about them a lot. Now, the procedures, they say, were all held in the bell tower, and that's where I took my person in the story too. So from what I can remember, according to some research, that there was another French war or something, and Napoleon also had for a little while the position of this island. The island was also a military base in the world wars. So when Napoleon came to the entire thing, he broke the tower, and then there was no bell on it for a while. So I'm not sure about the entire thing, but yeah. So the legends also say that in 1942, the doctor was finally driven mad and like gave into the hysterics that his patients were into. And one fine night, which is also documented by two nurses who saw the entire thing unraveling, but we really do not know who these two nurses are. They say that he climbed up to the bell tower and jumped, but it didn't feel like a jump as much. It felt like somebody pushed him. And when he fell, he didn't die. He was breathing, but he was like severely injured. And a white mist surrounded him, which came from the forest behind. And then that was the thing which suffocated him. After his death, the hospital was shut. Because, yeah. So at this moment, the whole thing is exceedingly dreadful. There are most probably people who were burnt alive, people who were just thrown into the paid plates for the sake of it, quarantine, an asylum. And I also realized while doing this research that I've not done the asylums, like any asylums as yet. And like, this is just the start of it. There've been worse asylums in the world, and especially in the United States. So that is basically a little bit about the entire history of it in a gist. And I read a lot of articles which were originally Italian and I translated them. And they used words like when the American came down to raid the island, or the paranormal crusaders, and they were referring to Ghostbusters, and I was like, okay, fun. So the place, as I said, is kind of restricted slash illegal to visit, but according to a lot of English articles, a lot of people who visited it are grape farmers. And that's why I talked about the grapes. And there was another podcast I heard wherein the visitors ended up eating grapes and such. And I tried to find there was another podcast that I heard who said that Pavilion wine is one of the finest wines and they have a huge yield and it's the best vineyard in Italy. But I was like, the entire island is less than 20 acres and most of it is in ruin. So there's not a lot of yield or space to plant grapes, A. B, I couldn't find the wine which originated from this said island anywhere. So I'm not sure how accurate the fact of grape farmers visiting and like using the soil because it has so much human remains as fertilizers is, but there was it and I'm telling it to you. Then people do end up getting into the island though it's restricted and illegal. So you can go there through water taxis and they'll drop you and pick you up at the assigned time, but they won't really stay there. And they also said that the fishermen do not really fish around the island, which is kind of a good thing because when they throw their nets, they can find skulls and people, like dead people in their nets. And there was this interesting article which was written by Australians, and they also spent a night there. And they met with this person called Giovanni. And I read into Giovanni, and the etymology of the word is basically it's equivalent of John. So it's a very common name. So I'm not sure if they want to say John Doe, but so Giovanni was there. And he said, and I quote, like, sweet. So Giovanni is an old person, kind of stout, the specific normal European person, and he decided to meet the Australian journalists. And when he met them, he was like, "Watch out for Paolo. He is the bad one. He was the doctor there. He will cause you troubles." He started, and then he was like, "I know them all: Paolo, Marco, Giorgio, and Giorgio is a friendly phantasma or a friendly ghost. And my father took me fishing there as a boy. And I was older. I stayed there myself for 15 days. When I came back, I told everybody what happened to me. The ghosts, what they did. Paolo's ghost mostly pushing me, whoosh, whoosh, always pushing things moving." And they all said, "Nane, you're crazy." And now everybody says the same about the island. And the person was like, "Why the fuck do you want to go there to the Australian sign or to the Australian journalist? Like, are you crazy?" So when he came, he talked with them and he went. Some people who overheard them speaking, so they were like, "Yeah, he's right." So in this article, by the end of it, they said that nothing really happened other than feelings and those feels that someone's watching you and stuff. But the journalist did document a chair which moved on its own across a room. So they clicked a picture at a time, and when they returned, the chair was not moving, it was moved by something or someone. So yeah. Now people, they see shadows, this I wanted to write figures, but in my notes I've written fingers. And they feel that they are being chased by people, they are touched at random places. They are footsteps, they are sounds which weren't there on the recordings, sounds like breathing and like whisperings. And fun fact about this island is that all the sounds are actually in Italian, and I was like, that's interesting. So yeah, anyway, when I was also watching one documentary on this, the bell is no longer there on the bell tower, but I can clearly remember the ringing of the bell. And when I was doing the research, I went back to that video to listen to it, and the bell was not ringing. And I was like, okay, my brain is weird, but all right. So there's also allegedly a spirit of a little girl who gets hurt and picked up, and she likes to play with people, and she's a cute person. And the island, like, and you know, being chased by ghosts and like whispered and being thrown around. So the island is kind of three islands together. So there's a little hexagon. Then there's this, like, in front of that hexagon is there's this huge ass buildings, which is like visible. And after those buildings, it is kind of a U. There's another canal of water, and then there's a trapezium of sorts. So that's the kind of island it is. So even if somebody's chasing you, you run, and then there's suddenly water, then there's a hexagon, and there's some other weird crap, and then you're running again, and then there's some another water and another weird crap. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's a stupid way to build an island. So there's also evidence of people being possessed there, and there's one specific legend which is extremely popular, that there was a family who moved in there in the late 1900s, and they fleed in under 2 days, maximum 2 and minimum 1 day, because the skin of their daughter's face got ripped out by an unknown entity, and she needed 14 to 20 stitches to stitch her face back together. Now, the Americans who keep on going there, they just go there and they're like, "You're a murderer! Oh my God, come talk to me!" And they kind of, rev up the ghosts. And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine, but why the fuck are you doing that? So there's also a Ghost Adventures episode on this entire thing. And the guy, he wore, according to the trailers and the reviews I saw, he wore the Plague Doctor mask into the island, and I was like, how fucking disrespectful is that? Like, seriously, how fucking disrespectful is that? So yeah, and then they have the audacity to go and say, okay, there's a negative energy here, or this dark entity here. If I died of plague and you wear a plague doctor's mask, who was most probably responsible to kill me, and you expect not for me to rip your fucking existence out of your head, you are mistaken. So yeah, also there was this one specific story which I read one reference in an article, and a very, very, very detailed account on a podcast called Scared to Death. And it was about five people from Colorado who came there. They heard drilling sounds, and there was blood gushing. Like, they got like ghost-like lobotomies and stuff, but it was very, very detailed. But I could not find one article to support that. And I was like, yeah, maybe this is full of shit, and they're just like putting in fluff in their podcast to talk about things. Though there were a couple things and topics that they told in the podcast which were very interesting and I want to cover, but I don't feel like covering, because I'm like, maybe that is a lot of lies. And yeah, so there's that. And in 2014, wait, before I get to 2014, there's a lot of funny things which I also kind of mentioned. So a lot of articles, as I read in Italian and then translated it to English. So I'm not sure if translation was it that got around the stone that they absolutely fucking hate the Americans and anybody who speak English. There was an actual article which said, like, this is the gory story you will listen about the island from the Americans, the idiots, or anybody who understands English. And I was like, I love Italians. So yeah, there's that. And in 2014, to clear off the debt, the Italian government tried to sell the island in an auction, and they were able to sell it to a Luigi, I believe, or maybe Luigi bought it once before. The island keeps on getting into different people's ownerships. The government keeps on leasing it, but nothing really happens to it. Though there are reports that maybe it's gonna have a luxury resort there. So yeah, so that is about it. And now I want to rant a little bit, that when I read about the paranormal research bit, it's a lot of history and not enough ghosts. Because when it comes to the ghost people, some idiots, they tend to overhype the entire thing to an extent that I do not feel like covering it, because I do not want to spread fake things like Fox News. But yeah, so sometimes it's annoying to do paranormal episodes, because I'm like, what's the fluff? What's the reality? At least with true crime, if there's fluff, we know it's fluff. We know it's conspiracy. Maybe it's because all these things is like in the 300s, like 300s was a very long time back. Like, but coming from somebody who's like 700 years old, it's not that long. But yeah, so that's it. That was my little rant. And now off to the end credits. The podcast is hosted by Koi On Air. It's co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy, and you can reach out to me, Koi, on Clubhouse, Twitter, Instagram with the handle Koi On Air, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. We're going to have a listeners validation episode gathering on 29th of June, so send in your stories on koi@ratemadebynefix.com. See you soon, alligators.